In the darkness, nothing is off limits. Expand your perception of reality. Welcome to Blackout with Samantha Scarlett and Eddie Varela.
Hey guys, it is September 1st, 2017, and this is Blackout with Samantha Scarlett and Eddie Varela. Today on the show, we have Oli Damagard, who is an expert on false flags and other conspiracies, including celebrity deaths and state-sponsored terrorism. So this should be a really interesting show. Eddie, are you there?
I am. Hello. Yeah, looking forward to this show. Oli covers just a whole bunch of topics, so there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I guess, like, to start off, though, because it is the first of the month, we have Tamar joining us to do the September astrology. So should we get her on the line?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get her on. Hey, Tamar.
Thanks so much, you guys, for having me back. Last month was an intense roller coaster with a lunar eclipse and a total solar eclipse with a new moon in Leo. And this month, it's time to kick off our shoes and squish our toes around in the dirt so that we can ground into the earthy fall Virgo energy. So basically, this is it was time to set new intentions with that solar eclipse, and this is now we get to watch the seeds that we planted grow. We have the full moon. This September is in Pisces. It's on September 6th, and it's also the day after Mercury goes direct. So Mercury retrograde will be over, thankfully. This is a much more dreamy full moon. It's intuitive. It's romantic. It's psychic. And you can think about it like the waters of Pisces, they run over us and cool us off after that fiery Leo new moon that we just had. So this is also a really important time to watch for prophetic dreams, dreams that tell the future. Keep a dream journal next to your bed. Pisces is also the last sign in the zodiac, so this is about completing a cycle. So the other thing is, though, it can be so dreamy that it's important for us to watch out for mental confusion. But overall, this is a peaceful, serene full moon, as long as we take it easy. Then we have the new moon, September 20th, in Virgo. So this continues the theme of change that began with the eclipse last month, and it might bring up some deep and painful old wounds, but this is absolutely necessary to begin the work of healing. So pay close attention to self-care with this new moon on the 20th, and also to meeting your own needs. Another important tool for this new moon is our sense of humor. So make sure to laugh. It's okay if your humor is dark. These are dark times, but make sure to laugh a lot. Then what we have after that is we have the fall equinox on September 22nd. So this is the point where the tilt of the Earth's axis is inclined neither away from nor toward the sun. It's a time of duality between dark and light. And it's also the time when we exit the earthy darkness of Virgo and head into the airy lightness of Libra. So it's about harvesting what we've been working on all year. So this is a time to stop and take note about all the plants you've seeds that you planted, and watch them grow. And that is your September astrology report.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And can you tell everybody where they can check you out on the internet?
Absolutely. Tarotbytamar.com. That's TarotBytamar.com. And available for tarot readings too.
All right. That's what to expect from astrology this month. I can't believe it's a new month, but Tamar keeps us on the ball here, so we know what's going on. Have you been taking her advice, by the way?
Sometimes, but I kind of forget about a lot of the astrology. I definitely was keeping my eye open around the eclipse for things to shake up politically, which I think they did to some degree, but not.
I mean, that's a
like,
daily
as much as we all thought.
Daily story, but, I mean, they break up or something shakes up.
Yeah, there's always something going on politically though this year. But speaking of political, we have Oli Damagard coming on in like just a second to talk about false flags, which I think all this is super interesting. It also scares me. And I also think a lot of these topics are controversial. And I also want to preface before we have him on, I don't necessarily, neither does Eddie, we don't necessarily agree or endorse these viewpoints. I'm not saying that we don't necessarily agree. It's just kind of like something, you know, it's like open to interpretation and I'm open to the idea of all this stuff. But we're not saying 100%, oh yes, this is true, and all like that this stuff isn't real terrorism or whatever. I just want to like,
yeah, we have no disrespect to any victims.
Yeah.
Yeah, this should be very interesting. Why don't we come back with Oli right here on Blackout?
Search Blackout with us on Facebook and Instagram. Back to Blackout with Samantha Scarlett and Eddie Varela.
It's Blackout with Samantha Scarlett and Eddie Borella. Our guest is Ole Damrgaard. He is the receiver of the Prague Peace Prize and the nominee of the Light Tower Award. He's an author, inventor, former journalist, investigator, and international Raja yoga teacher. He's dedicated the last 30 years of his life to researching many of the global conspiracies. He is now considered a world-leading expert on false flag operations, state-sponsored terror, and has been part of stopping several planned attacks. In addition to false flags, he has also researched topics like mysterious deaths of pop stars and breakthrough research on high-profile murder cases like Martin Luther King and JFK. Ole, welcome to Blackout. It's good to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure.
Now, how'd you get involved in the study of this stuff? Like, what intrigued you about false flags or celebrity deaths or state-sponsored terrorism?
It was, I have no idea, really. It started so many years ago. But what really got to me was that when I started feeling that we were being lied to on a big scale and by news agents and channels that were very respected, and I just couldn't understand what was going on. So I started looking into many of these cases myself, and I had no idea when I started that it was going to be my life, more or less. But this is what it's become, and I call myself a former journalist because I used to work as a journalist, but I think there's so few of the journalists nowadays that are real journalists. And now it's almost like it's up to us, the normal people, to find out what is really going on.
Now, I know that in one of your other interviews, you had talked about how back, I think it was in the 90s, you started investigating the assassination of a Swedish prime minister, and you had to move out of Sweden because people started turning up dead.
Yeah, that is unfortunately true. It was the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. He was shot dead in 1986. And when that happened, I had already spent several years looking into the JFK assassination, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and so on. And I was at a point where I started to see that there were so many things connecting these cases, and that it was almost like there was like a template being used on how to get rid of a top political individual, blame it on a lone patsy, a lone crazy guy, and then get away with it and dupe the population into believing that it was just something tragic that happened, and then thank you and goodbye, go back to your normal life. And then this happened in Sweden, where I was born in Denmark, but I grew up in Sweden, and that was where I was working as a journalist. And after a while, to start with, I thought, well, thank God it happened in Sweden. I can trust the police, I can trust the government, and so on. So it's just going to be a matter of time before they catch the guy. And then I started seeing the exact same signs of the cover-up that is so dramatic in these other cases, and following the exact same template. So that just blew me away. So I quit my job. I moved to Stockholm. I started working as a bus driver and was cleaning toilets, whatever, you know, to just keep me going. And it ended up with me spending almost 12 years looking into that case. And in the end, unfortunately, when the closer you get to the truth behind these big international events, then it gets very dangerous. And two of my friends ended up dead, and I had a visit as well at home, which was very scary. And so I decided it's not worth dying for at this point. So I left Sweden, I moved to Spain, and I've been living here since the year 2000.
Now, why do you think that they do this stuff? Is it to traumatize the public, or is it because they hold political views that go against what they want and they can't control the person?
Why they commit these assassinations? Was that the question?
Yeah.
It's totally, you have to look at it from case to case, but unfortunately, these people that have been taken out are mostly very beautiful individuals that stands for the things that normal people are dreaming about, you know, like justice, equality, harmony, peace, and so on. But the forces that are taking them out, what they are striving for is death, destruction, mass murder, greed, war, these things. So when individuals like JFK or Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Lady Diana, these type of individuals, when they stand up and they are so popular, this is one of the reasons they were taken out, is because of their popularity and the love that was generated in, around them, because that makes them very dangerous for these dark forces. Because if somebody like Lady Diana or JFK had said, listen, enough with this madness, we are going to go this way, then millions and millions and millions of individuals would have followed. And this is one of the big reasons why they were taken out.
Now, you just mentioned Lady Diana or Princess Diana, and I definitely wanted to talk about that because yesterday was the 20th anniversary of her death. And I mean, I was 7 years old when it happened, and I still remember exactly where I was and watching the funeral on TV. For at least my lifetime prior to 9/11, that was probably the most tragic event I can remember. So you're saying that they did it because she was like the symbol of beauty and grace, and she was out there helping people. Who do you think exactly killed her? Because I've watched a lot of videos about her death, and there's so many different theories. You know, a lot of people say the Queen did it, or Prince Charles did it so that he could marry Camilla, that Tiggy the nanny to the children, that she did it, that Prince Philip did it. There's even people that think that Dodi Al-Fayed's father had her killed, and like that it, like Dodi wasn't supposed to be killed though. So there's like so many different, or that he was in collusion with the royal family on killing her. What is your theory on the Princess Diana death?
When they take people out on that level, it's very messy, you know, so it takes a lot before they actually go ahead with it. So it's very often not one reason, but multiple reasons, just like with JFK, a multitude of reasons. And then suddenly it's just enough. That is it. And boom, they do it. With Lady Diana, I think there was multiple different reasons as well. She knew too much about the royal English family, which are very deeply involved in extreme criminality. But the thing I think that killed her was that she started going into the area of landmines. She had been down in Angola and other countries, and she was really standing up, trying to stop the spreading of landmines. And landmines, it sounds like, well, that's just another weapon, but it's a super important weapon for these dark forces, because it's through the landmines that they can go in and just take over big areas of territory. What they do is, if there's an area where they want poppy fields, or they want landing strips for fighter planes or whatever to refuel, whatever the reason is, what they do is they go in and they just fill the whole area with landmines. They put landmines there with inside dolls and toys and so on, so children will be blown up and so on. And these things will then make the local population totally terrified and move out of that area. And from that on, they have nobody messing with them in the wherever it is they do these things. So the landmine is extremely important in the New World Order agenda of how to take over new territory. And when Lady Diana was starting to stand up and say, my God, we need to stop this. It's horrible. It's horrible. And she was traveling around in the world talking, standing up against these landmines. That was when she signed her own death warrant, I think.
So you don't think it was over her dating Dodi Al-Fayed?
No. She hadn't known Dodi that long. And she had dated a Pakistani doctor and other people before. But for sure, I mean, I don't think it was very popular, but that was not the reason. And it was a big operation. It was security, both agencies on the British and the French side that were part of coordinating this hit. And but the English royal family was 100% involved in it, for sure, for sure. And it was a very cold and brutal assassination. Do you know, like, the thing was that she did not die in the tunnel.
Yeah, no, she did not die in the tunnel.
No, she didn't even have fatal injuries.
Yeah, so that's what I've heard. The first responder said that she still looked beautiful. She didn't have head trauma. She thought that she was going to live.
No, she had a small inner hemorrhage. You know, there was a bleeding inside her body, but she was in the back. She wasn't injured at all like that. But they kept her in the tunnel for ages. And then finally they took her to the hospital, but they didn't go to the closest hospital. And it took 1 hour and 43 minutes from when it happened until she finally arrived at the emergency. And that was, only like 6 kilometers to the hospital. But she didn't go to the one closest to the tunnel, the Alma tunnel. She went to this other one where people from both French and English intelligence agencies were waiting for her. But on the way there, there's even witnesses that saw how the ambulance stopped and was rocking up and down. And it seems like what they were doing were sort of hitting her, abusing her physically to get this hemorrhage going inside so that she would for sure be dead before she arrived. So she arrived and she died very shortly after. I mean,
so she had additional injuries when she arrived at the hospital that she didn't have when the car crash happened.
She had internal bleeding, but what it seems like was that they made absolutely sure that she would not survive. And this is also what you will see when it comes to these top political assassinations, is there will be triangular fire or more, even though you have maybe somebody that approaches the target with a handgun or something like that, you will have additional option 1, 2, 3 around them, additional getaway cars, additional backup plans, because the whole thing is that the target cannot go away alive. I mean, they need to take him out. And so this is what someone like myself had to look for, because there would be multiple shooters most of the time, multiple getaway cars, multiple options, multiple all of these things. And often these different teams don't even know about each other, because these operations are totally compartmentalized and in several layers often, so that it will be very confusing once you start looking into it, because it will just point all over the place. But this is done by design, and that's how they carry it out.
Well, and
the reason also why they always want a lone crazy guy, which is standard in these operations, is because if he is alone, then by law, there's no conspiracy. A conspiracy is two or more people that with a criminal intent are doing some actions in a certain direction. And by the way, conspiracy, it only means to breathe together, conspiration. Mm-hmm. But and the reason why they want him crazy is because then there was no motive. He was just crazy or fanatic, and that was why he did it. So they don't have to take him to court, they don't have to look into the motive. And so if he was alone and crazy, and then he dies there as well, boom, thank you, case closed, thank you, go back to sleep and just leave us with our business. That's the whole plan.
What I don't understand is why they're so sloppy in these situations, like with the Lady Diana thing. I mean, obviously, I honestly do believe that she was murdered, depending on who. I don't know that I necessarily believe it was the Queen, but I definitely don't think that she just, like, got in a car accident and died like we're told. Because, I mean, like, why would they take over an hour and 40 minutes to get somebody, especially somebody who is the most famous person in the world at the time? And it's not like she was famous like Kim Kardashian's famous for being a celebrity. I mean, she is a political figure. She is the mother of the future King of England. So over like any other person, she's not an average citizen. You would think that they would make sure she gets to the hospital because she's an important member of society. So obviously that is very, very suspect than all the other evidence. But then in like things like JFK's assassination, you know, they claim it was the guy from Lee Harvey Oswald shooting him from the book depository. And if he was shot from the book depository, that would be a shot from behind. But if you look at the autopsy or the video, it was the back of his head that exploded. And bullet holes or bullet wounds don't explode at the entry point. They explode at the exit point. So that would say that he was shot from the front. So it's like, I just don't understand why with this stuff, why they can't get it at least, like, you know, somewhat correct, like, so with what their story is. Or do they want us to kind of know that, yeah, we're doing this, we're going to claim otherwise, and you guys better stay in line?
I tell you, you call it sloppy. I say that it has taken thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours for researchers, private people who have risked their life. There's more than 370 people that have died around the JFK assassination that had some kind of connection with the crime, or knew anyone, or knew something, or was digging too deep into it. So this thing that is now sort of public knowledge, it has taken 50 years of incredible efforts to get out there. So no one knew that it was sloppy. No one knew these things until after all of these incredible efforts, myself included, to try and expose what actually happened. And this was a masterpiece when you look at assassinations, because still after 50 years, we're still confused. So the JFK one, incredible. At the same time, you need to look at who were involved. And the reason why the JFK assassination is so important is because individuals and powers that were part of slaughtering them, him there on that place in Dealey Plaza, November 22nd, 1963, are still in power. They're still in place. And George Herbert Walker Bush, for one, he was the paymaster for an ultra-secret hit team called Operation 40 that I've done so many interviews about, and that was, to a great extent, were part of this assassination. And George Bush himself were in the Deltex building together with some of the shooters and spotters, but the whole area was covered with different teams. It was an extreme ambush. Now, when it comes to Lady Diana, we're talking about sloppiness. Once again, had it not been for researchers that have been digging into this, risking their own life and limbs and whatever to find out the real truth, nobody would know anything, because the official story stands. It was an accident. Boom, that's it. Thank you and goodbye. But it's only because there are real journalists that are digging into it, not paid journalists by newspapers and media, but people that are just devoted to find out the truth.
Yeah.
So sloppy, I totally disagree with you. When it comes to some of these false flags, I totally agree with you. They are extremely sloppy sometimes, extremely. But these two cases you were talking about, I totally disagree.
Can I ask you a little bit about your process and how you go about doing your research? Because you've been doing this for quite some time. I mean, you're relying more on just Google searches.
The thing was, when they say awoke, I awoke sort of like around 1980 to the fact that what the hell is going on? That was sort of my awakening. And then I just got almost obsessed about trying to find out what was going on. And this is now so many years later. So what I did in the old days and what I still do is I try to go on location as soon as possible if I can. But I'm a one-man band. I'm not financed by anyone and so on. So it's not so easy. But I have been on location on more or less all the false flag operations that, or alleged terror attacks that have been carried out here in Europe. I've been on location. I've been sometimes on location before and stopping these events from happening, because there is a way of finding out what's going on. And I tell you, very scary at times, because many times when these alleged terror attacks happen, they are not terror attacks. These are NATO coordinated operations where the CIA, Mossad, and MI6 are very strong in the background. And just because it happens on one day doesn't mean that the operation stops there. It will still be latent, sort of like in a sleeping standby mode. But when somebody comes and gets too nosy, they get hit, you know, with their fingers or whatever. And so I've risked a lot, I have to say. And but like I say, what I try to do, it depends on if it's an assassination, one of these historical ones, or if it's a new false flag operation or alleged terror attack, very different. With the old ones, like with Kennedy, I think I read like more than 200 books. I've looked up witnesses, people. I'm a dear friend of Judith Very Baker, who was the mistress of Lee Harvey Oswald. I was one of the key speakers at the JFK assassination conference in Dallas last year, where I was also asked to represent the people of Europe and give a short speech after the silent minute in Dealey Plaza, which was incredible for me. And so what can I say? When it comes to the newer ones nowadays, when, for instance, at Charlottesville or Barcelona and so on, what I do with these things is I try to get hold of as much information as possible. I download everything right away, you know, because these things that are connected to the real truth will disappear very quickly.
You know, so, it seems that most conspiracy theorists will say any terror attack that happens, no matter what it is a false flag. Are there really actual terror attacks going on? Because every single one is shrouded in an alleged conspiracy.
I tell you, first of all, conspiracy theories, that is a CIA term that was created after the JFK assassination to be used against any dedicated truth seeker. And it's very specific because conspiracy theory, then you have a doubt. I mean, I'm not interested in theories at all. I'm only looking for the facts. I'm only looking for the truth. What happened? I'm not there to try and prove anything. I'm there to try and find out what is going on, who is doing it, and why are they doing it? Because what I want, I just want peace. I just want, leave us alone. Let us get on with our life and peace and joy and harmony and compassion. That's what I want. But there are these very dark forces that are, it's almost like a serial killer in a major city. You know, it only takes one person to terrorize the whole territory, and this is what we're seeing here. That I would say that the forces that are behind so much mayhem are, it is connected to the same, it's like an octopus with their tentacles involved in so many different areas, but it's all more or less all the time coming back to the same power, the same, what I called the power, that structure that is behind the so-called New World Order. And you ask about false flag operations. I almost wish that they were not false flags, all of them, because it's almost like, you know, I lose credibility when, like, yet another one and it's a false flag, yet another one. But I over these years, I can't remember the last real one. And it's not only me. We are talking about the CIA whistleblowers like Robert Steele. You have Judge Napolitano. You have many other insiders that are saying exactly the same when it comes to these false flag mass shootings in the U.S. All of them have been staged, financed, sponsored, trained by the FBI. And when you go abroad, the CIA is all over the place, but in bed with Mossad and MI6 and other agencies as well, connected to the Gladio network and NATO. So, but I would like to take to one step further, because I don't even think that what we are seeing are terror being spread all over the world. I think after all of these years that I'm in the process of identifying a small mobile unit, almost like, well, it's almost the same setup as a rock band on tour, but here it is a mobile film unit that are being transported around the world, carrying out, instead of concert, they're carrying out events with the intention to spread fear through media.
And it's, so, it's a group of the same individuals, you're saying. How many do you think are in this band of terror?
It's the core unit is not that big. I don't think so. And I think they're transported in army planes from, like military planes from NATO base to NATO base. It's always NATO countries or countries that have some kind of security agreement with NATO. So it's the U.S., NATO. So it's this, and it's also here in Europe. I can tell you exactly which countries are have had the hits and are going to be hit. It's the UK, France, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, Holland, Belgium, Turkey, sometimes Finland, sometimes Spain, and sometimes Italy. But normally it's the same countries again and again. It's even the same police districts, so that they're using the same chief of police, the same judges, the same people doing the investigations, or I would say non-investigations. And then the targets they are always looking for are either centers of transportation. It's like airports, train stations, bus stations, also, or vehicles of transportation. So it's airplanes, trains, ferries. But then there's a different type of target, and that is where the location has some kind of national of value when it comes to national identity, and where there's a touristic value as well, because what they're aiming for is to get the emotional reaction from us, where we will just go, oh my God, something needs to be done, and then we will accept their solution. It's based on an old Roman template called problem, reaction, solution. Mm-hmm. The elite few are the ones creating the problem to get the reaction from us saying, oh my God, help us. And then we turn towards the ones that we think are there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who have created the problem. And they will then say, well, the only way we can help you is by boom, and there's the solution.
And that solution and being about a police state and ultra surveillance?
It is the same solution every single time. Just like you say, robocops in the street, tanks, CCTV cameras, body scanners, us giving up our freedoms, our civil rights, our human rights. We're being pushed into a corner, and what they want is to close the gate around us so that we can't get out. And they're using this terror to destabilize, especially the terror attacks are aimed at Western Europe. The mass shootings are aimed at the US, where they try to make the weapons the problem, because it's only in the US where you have an armed population. So that is why you have the mass shootings. And the reasons why it's always in schools and colleges is because for the emotional impact, so that it's women and children, that's the one that works. Not old guys or cows or whatever. It's women and children, nuns, and sometimes nurses. These are the things that can get the emotions going.
When you get wind of one of these attacks that's about to happen, how much lead time do you normally have?
What is amazing is that in the end of, I think it was the end of 2014, I found out from an insider, and also I was stumbling across it myself, that the way these individuals that are involved in these very dark and sometimes satanic operations, I have to say, the way they interpret the law of karma is that they need to tell us what they're going to do. They need, even if it's in hidden in plain sight or in very, very subtle ways, they need to do it. Because if they don't, then the bad karma will come on their shoulders. But if they tell us what they're going to do and we do not react, then the bad karma is on our shoulders.
And are you referring to predictive programming, or?
This is what they do. They do it and they tell us in films and movies and magazines and so on. But it's even more than that. They leave very strong clues in the evidence around these things about the next upcoming event. And in the end of 2014, I think it was, when I started finding out that that is actually true, then what I've been focusing on is to just, as soon as something happened, boom, where is it? It's somewhere here. Where is the clue? Where is the clue? And at this point, I've been able to stop about 8 or 9 of them. Some of them on locations. Some of them pointing out on international radio 1 month before it happened, saying that is the next target exactly there. And I believe on that date.
And you show up to these locations and you're not worried that, I mean, how easy would it be just to take you out and make you part of the attack?
I'm very worried. This is not a fun game. I don't like it at all. These are very brutal forces. This is not just some, you know, like, oh, that would be cool. This is shit scary, I'm telling you. But it needs to be done. I mean, somebody needs to do it. And apparently, we can't trust our governments, and we can't trust the police and or the people in uniform that are there to supposedly to do these things for us. We have to do it ourselves. And So I would love for someone else to do it, but until they do it, I just have to continue, and I will do it.
What's the next? Are you working on clues for what you believe to be the next terror attack?
It's normally I don't say anything until I'm totally sure, because it's sort of like if you start, you know, like Peter and the Wolf. If you scream wolf all the time, you lose credibility and so on. But mm-hmm. I can tell you that there are what I'm identifying more and more are specific organizations and companies that are in. They are sort of the I call them the global tour of terror. They are the ones carrying out these operations, and I believe that I identified some of them. One company is called Serco, S-E-R-C-O. It is known as the biggest company you've never heard about. That is a very, very, very highly suspicious company involved in and controlling everything from the U.S. military to trains, buses, you name it, in so many different areas around the world. Then there's another company in England, and please, just because they're in different countries, don't make the mistake of thinking that they're not connected, because these forces are playing the world as a chessboard. They don't see the US, the UK, Germany. It's for them, it's just the same, but on a game board, you know, how they play us. And the company I'm referring to is called crisis-solutions.com. And on their websites, if you go there, they have one thing called Crisis Cloud, which I find very disturbing. They have a video there that you can watch. It's crisis-solutions.com. And it's very, you know, cheerful music, elevator music in the background. And then they say, when did you last have a crisis simulation? This is what they call these alleged terror attacks, I would say. And what they say is the time now when you used phones and was shoveling A4 papers, that these times are over. Now we've taken it to a whole new level. And this is what they call crisis cloud. And they show you in this video how they have different units that they can in live a live timeline. They have one, what I think they call it the C squadron or something like that. That is where they organize and control their forces on a street level, where they, you know, what looks like ambulance drivers, firefighters, police, SWAT teams, military. What I'm saying is looks like it, because just because they have got uniforms on does not mean that they're the real thing. Just like at a film set. Crisis actors, amputee actors, pyrotechnics, explosives, all of these things are in that unit. Then they have another one called, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, the Seaboard, I think. And there it's they have CEOs from different companies, whoever is concerned from different agencies, intelligence agencies and so on. They're there coordinating the whole thing. Then you got another unit that are they're specifically creating fake media outlet. I mean, news, press conferences that are absolutely fake, but being pumped out as real. Then you got another unit that is pumping out hundreds and hundreds of Facebook accounts, fake Facebook account, but with the official story, meaning absolute lies, connected with Twitter accounts doing exactly the same thing. And then you have what is called a crisis cloud in the middle that are connecting all of these things. And they brag and they say that they can do multiple simulations at the same time. In it doesn't even have to be in the same country, but even on different continents at the same time, simultaneously. And the only thing that people involved in this whole thing need is to be connected to the internet. So they can sit on some Bahama island with a big cigar and be part of creating this mayhem.
So there are, you know, literally hundreds of players involved here, and many of them actors, I assume. What's their motivation and what's keeping them quiet? I mean, what are we ever going to hear about one of these people breaking and spilling the beans if this is indeed going on?
It is a very good question, and please understand that the crisis actors are not very intelligent people most of the time, not very good actors, because all the normal good ones have already been taken and could easily be recognized since they've done commercials and so on. So they need to use the absolute worst, and they are not good, these crisis actors, many times. I've spoken to Chip Tatum, who is a CIA whistleblower. He was a deep cover agent for 25 years. He was involved in false flags during his career. He was also the commander of an ultra secret hit team called Pegasus under the direct control of George Bush Sr., where he was part of taking out 17 assignments, meaning 17 assassinations. So, I mean, this is a guy he's now a whistleblower, but with a very dark background, but with a lot of insight from the inside. And I keep getting this question, why are there no whistleblowers? Why is nobody spilling the beans when it comes to these crisis actors? And he said, it's very, very easy. What you do is you have a small little unit, so you use the same individuals again and again and again, which we will see. We've seen also many times the same individuals popping up around these events, either in Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Ottawa, Sydney, same individuals, and so on. But what he said is, what they do is, they have to sign confidentiality agreements, meaning that if they say anything that is out of order, they can get sued from here to the moon. Then they're paid very well. He said money is not a problem. Normally, when he was traveling around with his team, he was a pilot in many of these operations, and he said he had somewhere between $25,000 and $250,000 in his pockets at all time, should somebody need to be bribed or something like that. So money is not an issue here. So they're paid well, which keeps most people quiet. Then he says, if there should be any type of problem, what you do is you gather the group, and then you bring in somebody's grandmother or dog or one in the group, and you just cut their throat or you beat them up. And wow. That will keep the rest of the group terrorized and in line.
Wow.
It's very brutal. I mean, you have to look at the individuals involved in controlling this. They are very cold, well-disciplined, mercenary types. You know, there's bodyguards, there's controllers around this as well. But they're not the ones giving the orders or planning these whole thing. There are marketing agencies involved, coming up with slogans, coming up also doing product placement, where they, in the middle of very intense photos for many of these alleged terror attacks, you will see like a Coca-Cola bottle right in the middle, or Nike trainers right in the middle of the photo, where that is actually the thing where your eye is caught or drawn to. You will see it repeatedly. I mean, so it's not just a one-time thing. It's in the hundreds.
Wouldn't it make people averse to buying these products? I mean, if I see, like, let's say, Coca-Cola in the middle of a terrorist attack, that's not going to make me want to go out and buy Coca-Cola. That's going to make me associate Coca-Cola with terror.
It's the other way around. It's like when you can ask any psychologist or marketing agency, if they can get you emotionally open, that is why, you know, like if it's insurance or something, they will have granddad and dogs and grandma, and you will go, oh, soppy, oh, it's so cute. Boom, that's where they hit you, when you open up emotionally. And here they put it right there, but hidden in plain sight, so you don't notice it, but your subconscious is totally open for it. So you see these things, oh my God, that's so horrible. You're totally open, and that's where they place it. So you will see these placements, they're always right in the center of the image, very close to some horrific detail, you know, some killed girl or child or something like that. For instance, when they, at the 7/7 bombings in London, where there were multiple hits in the subway and also one bus that is said to have been blown up. Mm-hmm. And on that bus itself, the whole roof is torn off. And on the bus itself, on the side, on one side, it says terror, pure brilliance. And on the other side, where these photos were spread all over the world, there's a big poster, no text, no nothing, with a big explosion, and right in the middle, there's a Coca-Cola bottle.
Wow.
So you see this wreckage, and you don't see it, you just look, oh, the mayhem, the dead bodies, and without knowing it, you're just seeing the Coca-Cola bottle there as well, right there.
I was going to ask, was Heaven's Gate the mass cult suicide in March of 1997 in San Diego, California? Was that another false flag event? Because obviously that had all the cult members were seen, and it's such an ingrained image in my head they all killed themselves wearing the Nike Decade sneakers, and every image from inside that house of, like, I think it was like 40 people that killed themselves. Mm-hmm. Are them on the beds with the purple sheet over their head and the Nike swoosh on the side of their shoes.
That is ingrained in my memory, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like 7 years old when that happened, but I'll never forget that image from seeing it on like CNN or whatever. So was that a product placement?
I think that whole thing, I don't believe it at all, I must say.
I think
it's exactly part of this operation as well. Just like you say, you got the color coding, the purple, the black, and the Nike. All of them had black Nike on with the white. And it's most of the time, it's exactly that shoe, the black one with the white logo on it. But mm-hmm. Nike even did, it's almost ridiculous. I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews, and Nike is there all the time with their shoes right in the middle. So I would say they're big sponsors of this. So as such, also Toyota is also big sponsors in this, because when you look at ISIS, which is just the boogeyman, this is a creation made by the US and Israel, funded by Saudi, as a boogeyman, because they need this outer threat. And in every single photo of ISIS, if there is a vehicle, I dare you, it would be a Toyota. So big question to Mr. CEO of Toyota, why on earth, if you are not involved, why do you keep selling these vehicles in the hundreds to this organization that are destroying so much officially? Mm-hmm. But they are not, because they're part of funding the whole thing.
In cases like Heaven's Gate, do you believe that the people all died, or is that a hoax? Was it just actors?
I've looked into that. It's years ago. I'm confused. I would not be surprised if it was a hoax, knowing what I know now. Because also when you look at it, it's like the whole mad thing about, oh, the end of the world, and you've got this individual speaking into the camera that looks like a total nutcase. And then there's no photos of anything. All the bodies are covered. The only thing you can see are the Nike shoes, and the color purple. And the color purple is also, since these operations are color-coded, and you will see that there is the same color code now. The last year, purple and pink has been extremely important. And it's even called now the George Soros Purple Revolution, in what they're trying to do, this whole overtake of the states and the Western world.
You know, with all of these operations going on, you really have to wonder, and think about the fact that we must be extremely close to what some would call world peace if we could just get rid of some of these characters and these organizations. We're much closer than we believe, right?
I'm super optimistic. I am super optimistic, I tell you, because the thing is, it looks like absolute mayhem, but when you see how few they are, it's ridiculous. Well, I think when you look at individuals that are directly involved in the New World Order, even though they're in key positions and often in so-called power positions, but I think in total they're around 8,000. And then you compare to the rest of us, we are billions. So it's really the Wizard of Oz, you know, that we pull the curtain and suddenly we will start seeing how weak they are, how few they are. And most of them are old men, you know, and just like in the Wizard of Oz, they're there, no muscles, no talent, no courage, no nothing. The only thing they have is this microphone and a massive big amplifier, which is mainstream media. And it's through that that they're pumping out all the time, trying to keep us fearful and in the grip of fear, because that is the only way they can control us, is when we are fearful.
Well, before we run out of time with you here, why don't we talk a little bit about mysterious deaths of pop stars?
Yeah, I want to get into that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and start this topic?
Because I was like, I have like kind of a list here of people I was curious about. Especially, I obviously, in this, once again, we don't endorse that this stuff is necessarily a hoax. I just want to put that out there, not to offend anybody. But, the one right now, there's been so many conspiracies since these two deaths occurred, and they were so shocking. It's just this summer, we've had Chris Cornell from Soundgarden and Chester Bennington from Linkin Park both supposedly commit suicide, and they were both friends. And then it happened 2 months apart, and Chester killed himself on Chris Cornell's birthday, and it was both hangings. And there's just all of it is kind of, sudden and mysterious. Have you investigated those two deaths at all?
I have, not deep enough to really say anything for sure, but both of them are highly suspicious. Also, there are very strong suspicions and connections with John Podesta in the Pizzagate scandal, where it seems like that he might be the father of Chris Bennington.
And Chester Bennington.
Chester, yeah. And where Chester was in the process of, together with Cornell, to expose some of these child abusing organizations and individuals. And this was when both of them is said to have been stopped. It's very important not to jump to any conclusions and really look into these things. I've been buried in so much else around Charlottesville and Barcelona and Marseille. And I mean, it's just on a weekly basis now almost. But I would be very, very suspicious. Also, Bennington's wife, no, Cornell's wife, I think it was, she also said that he did not commit suicide, that he was dead when he was hung up. And but this is how they do as well. You start challenging these dark forces, they hit back, and they hit back hard. So we are at a brutal time because they are desperate, I think. These dark forces, they're desperate because they know that the fog is lifting, that more and more people are starting to clearly see what's going on. And also, when normal people understand how much they have messed with us, raped, plundered us, and how few they are, this is when it gets dangerous, because then we're looking at lynching times. And this is something I really want to do everything I can to stop and not participate in, because if we do that, if we react violently, then this madness will just continue. You will see that if you study history, when you look at revolutions, the people take over, they chop the head of whatever dictator was there. Within a few years, the people that took over are even worse than the ones that were there before. So we have to do it in a totally different way, transcend the whole thing. And in my opinion, Mahatma Gandhi's way and Martin Luther King, that is the way forward. That is the way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've mentioned in other interviews that even celebrities going back to the 60s, like Jimi Hendrix, who supposedly died of drug overdose or choked on vomit, that these were also murders.
Jimi Hendrix was murdered. I'm still not really sure why or how. I know how he was murdered. He was held down and filled. They filled him with red wine so that once he arrived to the hospital dead, the doctor said that as soon as they even touched his chest, red wine was coming out. His lungs were totally filled. So he drowned of red wine. And he had a manager that was very, very highly suspicious and involved in very suspicious areas as well, that later died in an airplane crash where two planes collided in midair. So what I can tell you is that Jimmy, that was not an overdose. He was murdered, but the reason why I am still not totally sure about.
How about Robin Williams?
Robin Williams is one of these, again, big question mark. I don't know, but he died in a very similar way to like these two from Linkin Park and Cornell. Very similar way of hanging themselves. It's very difficult to say. I don't know. I have to be on location. I need to speak to close family members, friends, people who saw the crime scene and so on to be able to say something. But whatever the reason was, it was a massive loss for humanity, I think, when he died.
What about Michael Jackson?
Oh, you're picking them. You're handpicking them. This is another one, a major question mark, I think, as well. Because if I go back to Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower, one of the things that he did was he was a pilot. He was one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras scandal. He was a black stalker pilot, you know, these black helicopters, night stalker pilots. And one of the things that he did was transporting individuals from the States, mostly to Canada. And he said that many of these individuals that he flew out, he said, were officially dead. But it was not at that time. He was just a military guy. He was under orders. So he never asked questions.
Wait, so
are
you saying that Michael Jackson might be alive?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. There are certain things that where you see when they arrive to the hospital, there's one individual that looks like Michael Jackson that is walking around. There's one individual at the funeral, and he's dressed all in white with a white hat and makeup, and Michael was famous for liking to put on makeup and all of these things. And there's this mm-hmm. woman in front of one of the seats in front of him that is just turning around and just like, and you can see it in her lips. She goes, "Michael?" like this, and he just holds and quiets her down. I don't know. Like I say, these exact two cases I'm confused about, because mm-hmm. you also have where when artists like Whitney Houston or other people, you know, when they start hitting their 40s, 45, 50s, they come to a point where they're worth more dead than alive. Because like Whitney, she was on her way down, she was losing her voice and so on. So when they die at that exact point, and where there's a lot of preparation done before to prepare for a massive promotion, you know, and with the whole memorial thing and the best of records and movies and all of these things, the dark forces make absolute fortunes when somebody dies like that. And you will see that, for instance, when before Whitney was even dead, hardly, the prices on iTunes and other of these music platforms were doubled within minutes, like if somebody had been there just on standby. And the whole setup around Whitney is super cold, just like with Lady Di. I mean, very brutal the way that she was taken out. And the official story, absolute lies, absolute lies.
Mm. Fascinating. Well, the website is lightonconspiracies.com if you want to look at all the research and topics that Oli covers. We appreciate you coming on the show and talking about all these topics with us.
My absolute pleasure. You take care.
Find the podcast on iTunes. This is Blackout.
So, Eddie, what are you doing for the weekend? It's the holiday weekend, Labor Day.
Well, I am going to be barbecuing a little bit, having some people over. I'm not leaving town or anything. I was hoping to leave town, but that didn't really come together. So mostly just kind of chilling out. How about you?
I don't even really know. I'm supposed to go out tonight. I was supposed to actually like hang out with JJ Bryan. I think I'm still probably going to see him, but he finally came back to the United States earlier this week.
That's good.
But yeah, I know. So we can't really contact him anymore about like what's going on in the Middle East, but I'm supposed to like see him and some other people tonight, but I don't really know. I'm kind of tired, so I might not end up going out. As far as Monday and like the real holiday weekend, I don't really know. I kind of tend to be low key about this stuff. And here on the, I don't know how it is in Denver. I know like California and Arizona, the pools stay open, but here on the East Coast, this is the last weekend to go swimming if you like outdoor pools. So that
Same here. The last weekend for all of that. Usually, although I've lived in places that have like year round outdoor heated pools, but for the most part, like all like the major water parks and stuff close. So it is like the last weekend of summer. But not really. I mean, it's like on paper, the last weekend of summer. Yeah. I think we have a couple more weeks left, but
I personally don't understand it because it usually stays warm here in New York through like the end of September,
right.
But yet they close the pools as like soon as it's Labor Day weekend. It's like, okay, the pool's shut. It's drained. Which
I know. It's just like, look at the forecast and then play it by ear for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, cause some years doesn't snow until like Christmas. But anyway, to any of our fans out there, have a very safe Labor Day weekend. If you drink, do not drive, and have
fun. There's a lot of cops out, so don't even try it.
Yeah, well, it's not even so much the cops. If you drink and drive, you should get arrested. It's more don't kill anybody.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's just it's dumb. They're like they always crack down on it, like this weekend and then Memorial Day weekend, because it's stupid to drink. There's like no reason for it. Get an Uber.
Yeah, get an Uber. Get a Lyft. Or, like, walk home, because it's not fair to put people's lives in danger.
Yeah. But, all right, well, good show. If you're listening.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to Tamar, tarotbytamar.com, if you want to get a reading from her. And thank you to Ole Damegard for coming on and talking about false flags and celebrity deaths and just, like, tons of interesting stuff.
Lightonconspiracies.com is his website. Okay. And if you're listening on Adobe, remember this is a podcast as well. You can subscribe to it, listen to all the episodes that you haven't listened to yet. Just search for Blackout, and then we're Blackout with us on all social media.
Yes. Talk to you guys next week.